The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
It was the round of football we seemingly needed to have, the highest scoring round of the season, thrilling upsets and lots of close results. But where does it leave a number of teams battling for final spots in the 2018 AFL season? Our run home expert has all the analysis and inside information on the Fox Footy podcast ahead of round 16. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth. And as I welcome the regular crew, Tom Morrison, Max Lawton, a lot has changed since we last saw each other. For those that aren't interested, but I'm sure might be to a certain extent, we normally see each other at 10 p.m, Thomas, on a Monday night. Maxie leaves at about 10 p.m, you leave at about 10 p.m. after on the couch.
Yep.
And then I stayed back till about 11 o'clock, which ended up being 1:30.
Why did you stay back, Ben?
I've never been on a shift like it in terms of the Australian v. Philippines basketball brawl.
So, Ben, you were working running the homepage of foxsports.com.au, and apparently some basketball things may have happened, although I could have sworn it was WWE.
Yes, it looked very WWE-like, well, didn't it?
Not quite a suplex, but some flying knees. Sort of
chairs thrown was the key. Yeah. That's when it really became WWE. I've got to say, though, I didn't know this World Championship of Basketball or qualifying was happening.
The FIBA World Cup.
I certainly do now. And given that no one was seriously injured,
Is
it wrong for me to say I quite enjoyed it?
Well, I'm kind of not surprised you said that, Thomas. That is a very Tom Morris angle to take.
Well, it was real entertainment. Look, if someone got seriously injured, it would have been shocking, and I would have not thought that. But everyone was okay. It was so ridiculous, it was funny in the end. The fact that they had three on the court, and then they fouled deliberately to make themselves
fair,
one on the court.
Yes. That was fast.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it got all the AFL player community up and about. Sam Jacobs, what the hell is going on in the Philippines? Disgraceful. We are a legit basketball nation with hopes to make an imprint on the world stage with the quality we have, and we get mixed up in this. Nick Nat was a 5v3 with a facepalm emoji afterwards. Corey Maynard, who obviously dabbled in this in this area, hoping Nathan Sobey and Chris Golding are okay playing basketball in those countries. There's no rules. You never quite feel safe, and you can only hope it never balls over just like that. And then Hugh Greenwood, who was a very fine basketballer, says, that's why we brought in Anthony Drimmick into the side for a reason, who was an Adelaide 36ers player. So,
what about Scott Pendlebury, basketball background, I hear here?
Yes, he retweeted a couple of things, didn't sort of go into the situation.
I also hear Corey Gregson was a gymnast.
Yeah, oh, was he really?
Did Mark Blitzov have some sort of running background?
It was some sort of steeplechase, decathlon type thing.
Never know.
What I will say, though, is the most predictable follow-up article from this that will 100% come over the next 24 to 48 hours is an Australian media agency showing footage of an American media agency talking about the fight.
Of course, always. 100%.
We made ESPN.
Yes. We're always proud that we're at ESPN for fighting against the Philippines. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
If you do want to see the footage and some great analysis from Olga Newlick, who did a great job last night, foxsports.com.au. But we are here for the Fox Footy podcast. Our way in, was the AFL players' reaction. But a lot of things happened over the weekend, Maxie. Mm. It was a fantastic round of football. And from a run-home perspective, which is now up on foxfooty.com.au, up on Sunday night.
Yes.
Are there any major implications for any of the sides? Because between that sort of 7th to 12th range on the ladder, is there any implications for those sides in particular?
Well, absolutely. I think there is implications for that and for the top four, because Collingwood and Port are pretty much sure of playing finals at this point.
Yep.
Both being 10-4, that 1.5-game advantage on GWS, 2 games on everyone else, you would think they'd be making it. And I think Collingwood's probably the best chance to finish fourth right now, which would be extraordinary. Right. And the fact is, Collingwood, if you look at their fixture, this is the key. They finished 13th last year. And who finished 13th in 2016?
Tigers.
Yes.
This is the key. They're getting that kind fixture, being in that bottom bracket.
Mm. If you're at the top of the bottom bracket, so you're still a reasonable team, but you still get the same draw as the 17th or 18th team would get. That's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. You get that extra game.
Is that fair then, Thomas?
No, the whole fixture isn't fair. So some teams are going to be more advantaged than others. The reality was, I think Collingwood's 2017 fixture was ranked one of the hardest by Champion Data. This year, we wrote an article in December that it was the easiest. Mm. So we knew they were going to have an easy fixture, but you've still got to beat the teams that are in front of you. And in the end, the team that wins the flag is the best team, regardless of what home and away fixture you've had.
So you've had a good look at the Pies, Maxie, what they've done so far and what is to come, and it's looking pretty peachy.
Yeah, I think I remember writing an article saying they're going to be the Richmond of this year because of that fixture. They can win 14 games all of them but one against teams in the bottom 10.
Mm. Yeah.
So they've beaten Melbourne, who are seventh right now. Every other they've got four more games against teams currently not in the top eight. It's extraordinary that they can get that. 14 wins probably gets you top four in some seasons. It might even this season.
Yeah.
They pinch one more. But they're not even proving themselves to be a great team, and yet they're going to be there potentially against Richmond on the first weekend of September.
That would be unbelievable.
Incredible,
a qualifying final for MCG.
Yes.
But no Lyndon Dunn and no Adam Treloar means that I'm ruling them out of premiership contention.
I think when Treloar went out, he was that point of difference, that explosiveness through the midfield. Dunn doesn't help. I think they can replace him to a certain extent with Brody Majacek.
He's a pretty important player. He's also underrated because he kicks out and he has that distance. And the amount of emphasis placed on the kicker outers in today's game is more than ever to try to clear that zone. He can roost it. So no Daniel Wells as well with that foot. Jamie Elliott's been in and out of the team through injury. Things are working against Nathan Buckley. But if they do win it, it would be one of the great flag victories, wouldn't it?
So from a run home perspective, after those victories on the weekend, are Essendon, GWS and Adelaide still in the hunt for finals?
GWS definitely is. I think if you look at their draw, I've got them finishing on 11.5 wins.
Right.
But I think that might be pessimistic.
Right.
So they're on 8 now. Let's see. They have West Coast at Optus this week, which is such a great time to play West Coast
really
at Optus, isn't it?
That's
a real chance of winning that. And then Richmond at home. So, you know, it's a better chance than playing Richmond in Victoria, but still tough. And then Port at the Adelaide Oval. So that's three really tough games. But I think if they win one of those, they're a chance. Because then they've got St Kilda, Carlton, Adelaide in Canberra, where they're so good. Sydney at Spotless, and then Melbourne at the MCG. They could well be needing a 12th win against Melbourne at the MCG, while Melbourne also needs that 12th win in round 23.
Have Melbourne stuffed this up, Tommy?
No, they haven't stuffed it up yet. But I tell you, I mean, I rebelled against the pot shots from several non-Melbourne supporters suggesting that the Demons are flat-track bullies.
Yes.
But right now, I'm regretting those rebellious remarks from myself.
So you think they're flat-track bullies?
I think that is the obvious deduction from what we've seen, isn't it? The obvious conclusion, given what they did to bottom six teams in that period of play where they played so well and what's happened in the last couple of weeks, specifically on the weekend.
Well, was that not the flattest of tracks? St Kilda at the MCG?
Yeah, but this was the old Melbourne, wasn't it? This was a team losing against a team they should absolutely not lose to under any circumstances. That's the point. So had they beaten Port Adelaide, I would be saying exactly the same thing. If Melbourne had beaten Port Adelaide, they still shouldn't have lost to St Kilda.
Mm. No, of course not.
The key for Melbourne this year was that they were not going to lose to teams, to clubs, that they should absolutely beat.
Mm-hmm.
So the games they'd lost to Hawthorn, who are about the same mark on the ladder, maybe a little bit lower, and they'd lost to teams above them. But they hadn't been beaten. In fact, they'd smashed the bottom teams. St Kilda were a bottom team. This was the Melbourne of old, and it's placed their finals campaign in real jeopardy because, as you know, Max, better than anyone, you could miss out with 13 wins this year.
Yes.
Melbourne's percentage is good.
Yeah.
But they're not guaranteed to even get 13 wins from here.
So they're not going to get the last year effect of missing on percentage, that's for sure. Because they've got the second best percentage in the league, and they're seventh.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Which shows how close this season is. Next 2 weeks are really big for them. Fremantle in Darwin.
That's huge.
Really winnable given Fife and Sandilands probably both missing.
Yes.
So that's a huge win for their season. And then the Bulldogs at the MCG is big as well, given the Bulldogs have played themselves into form, particularly over the last couple of weeks. Geelong down in Geelong, Adelaide in Adelaide, Gold Coast at the G, they should win, although we had that game, what was it, last year or a couple of years ago, where they had that shot after the siren, the Suns, to win it.
Yes.
Sydney at the MCG, West Coast in Perth, GWS at the MCG.
It's a tough run home.
They probably need to win one of those last three to make it to 12 or 13.
But we shouldn't even be talking about Melbourne pushing for finals. They should be pushing for top four, given their list and what position they were in after, 12 rounds. The fact they're making it hard for themselves now only puts a lot of stress on a lot of people at that club and around that club.
The positive for me, though, I think there are two extremes for Melbourne's season. I think they either miss the finals or they win the flag.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
What do you mean?
Because so you think the finals win the flag.
So I think Melbourne can win the flag. I think Melbourne wins the flag if they make finals.
Right.
Because if they get into the top eight, they will have had to have beaten good teams.
Yeah,
they will have had to have proven that they can do that.
But they're going to win four finals in a row if they do that. That's rare. I know it's not unprecedented.
I think they can do it.
Yeah, okay.
I think they're going to play themselves into form. If they do get to that situation, they will have figured out what is ailing them right now, whatever it is defensively, where they're allowing so many goals per inside 50, which has been highlighted by Couch 2 weeks in a row. I think they can fix that. The stumbling block, of course, is Richmond, who are the dominant favourites and probably
of course
you take them against the field right now, but
at the MCG, you might back Melbourne in that situation.
I think they're one of the teams who, get, if they get themselves into form, can beat Richmond at the G.
No Jake Lever hurts.
So how much has that influenced Melbourne? You mentioned the scores against once they go inside, or opposition teams go inside Melbourne's defensive 50. Paul Ruse was big on the couch last night about some unusual selections. So he's not a like-for-like replacement for Lever, but Sam Frost is, you would think, the guy who should come in for Jake Lever. He gives that speed. He's got that versatile height as well. Are you in agreement that there's been some unusual selections at Melbourne Match Committee this year?
I think so. I'm not sure what's going on behind closed doors, but I was surprised they played Petty. I think Melbourne supporters don't want to see the future now. They want to see the best 22 as we speak.
Yep. Yeah. They should be in contention.
So if that's Cam Pedersen, play him.
Yep.
And play him now.
Jeff Garlett, do you play him now as well?
I think you have to. Jaden Hunt has pace, and that's something that Melbourne looked like they really like.
I think he's injured.
Oh, yes, of course he is. Yep. You're right. No, so some of the selections have been bizarre, but even more than that, it's the delivery inside the forward line, which I think they spoke about on the couch as well, which I found frustrating for much of the year, because they get the ball 70 metres out and they just seem to wildly bomb it to the top of the square, which can work out brilliantly, but it's a bit random. And if you look at good teams, look at the way Richmond do it. They just hit up a target 40 metres out and that person kicks the goal. Really simple goals. Melbourne's being made, they're making themselves work too hard for every score. And it means there's no consistency about it whatsoever. So there's a lot of problems at the Demons at the moment, and they need to fix them pretty soon or they're going to miss out again.
Where does it leave the Saints in particular? So they've had the bye and they've got a win, you know, quite rarely actually. A win either side of the bye is quite a good achievement, actually.
Yes.
Especially for a team that had only won one game prior to that Gold Coast victory as well. Some little glimmers of hope for Saints fans?
Glimmers of hope. They should have done it earlier, clearly. Where's this been?
Where did that ball movement come from? Was that Geelong 2007?
Well, that's what they did last year in many games, St Kilda. They moved the ball forward quickly and aggressively, almost recklessly, didn't they?
Mm.
And it hasn't been seen this year. I'm not sure quite why that's been the case, but they are now. I love Alan Richardson's proposal to his players that, why has Melbourne gone ahead of us? Or has Melbourne gone ahead of us during the week? And the players came out fired up and they played like it. It was brilliant. Apart from the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes, St Kilda was clearly the best team on that day. There's no doubt St Kilda has underperformed this year, but if they perform relatively well towards the back end, they can still finish 11th, maybe 12th. And it's not completely beyond the realms of possibility.
No.
And if they did that, then you'd have to say, well, they've sort of recovered okay. There's still going to be lots of changes at the end of the year. That won't change.
They have a very kind draw. Their last month is all games that Eddie had.
That's why I say it. So, look, they're not playing like a team that's going to finish 16th or 17th anymore. They'll be hoping they can get up into 12th. And if they finish 12th, well, probably not great for the draft, but better for their supporters to see some hope.
Lots of questions at the start of the year around why Jack Sinclair was rated as elite, but I think he really inspired that ball movement on the weekend.
Mm.
Couch highlighted last night some incredible running patterns and work rate that he was able to personify, I think, the Saints. He personified the Saints' work rate.
He's an incredibly smart player.
Yeah.
The way that he holds... Do you remember the way... Well, he wears number 35, Jack Sinclair, so it sort of suits him, but the way Robert Harvey used to have the ball and he could just angle his body in any way he wanted to and just chip it in any direction, it's a real skill to have that rather than just bullet gate sort of running straight down the lines. Jack Sinclair has that. He's got really good vision. Look, I was surprised he was rated elite as well. I don't think for the layman he's an elite AFL player, but he's a really valuable player to St Kilda's team when he's up and about.
What about Essendon and Adelaide with those wins over North Melbourne and West Coast respectively? Are they still a chance?
Yeah, I think if you had a team that had Adelaide's percentage but Essendon's draw, they'd make it.
Right.
But 7-7, it's really tough for both of them. So Adelaide still got, they had to win one or two of the games in this 3-week patch, and they've done that beating West Coast. That was enormous for them.
Mm.
Richmond at the G, probably still a bridge too far.
Yep.
And then Geelong at home is a big one as well, because Geelong really needs a win, given their fixture as well. And then so Adelaide also has then Brisbane at the Gabba, not a guaranteed win at all. Brisbane looking quite good. Melbourne at home, the showdown, GWS in Canberra, which again is quite tough. North at home and Carlton. There's only one win you'd say it's pretty much guaranteed there, which is the last round of the season, Carlton.
Yeah.
And even then, Carlton in Melbourne can pop up and be okay sometimes.
I don't think Adelaide's going to make it.
I don't think they are either.
No.
I think that's too tough.
Yeah.
And I don't think they deserve to make it, really.
No, and if they do, I don't think they're going to make a splash. I just think that you can't flick a switch in this competition this year.
They flicked a switch on Saturday night,
didn't they? Fourth quarter did.
Oh.
You did. No, you can flick a switch in a game, I reckon. You can just turn it on sometimes. But against a good team in a final, I think it's too much to ask for them to flick a switch and play a completely different brand to what they've done for most of the year.
Okay. If we look at Adelaide as the team that we all thought they were coming into this season, where everyone had them top four, maybe even top two, wouldn't they win six or seven of these games, potentially all of them?
They would.
Yeah, but I think
times have changed.
I can't ignore the past 2 months.
No.
In particular. I just can't get that performance against Hawthorn out of my brain at the moment. That was a really bad
one. Yuck.
It was yuck. But I think having some decent players back in the side, Laird, Sloan, Luke Brown, your favourite player,
I love
Thomas,
Luke Brown, yes.
really helped. Which is on North Melbourne as well. How they're now out of the top eight after the weekend, and a lot, they're playing, you know, they were playing like top eight certainties almost, and that's sort of the mindset that a lot of AFL pundits have got themselves into. Are they a big chance of missing out in the finals now?
I think so. I think they do at this point.
Yeah.
The path is still there for them to get to 13 wins, but you can't necessarily trust them because Bulldogs and Essendon you would have had down as win-win if they were playing as the way they were over the first half of the season. Mm. But they were the AFL's best defence, and they allowed Essendon to score 86 points in the first half on Sunday, which was extraordinary. No shutdown at all in the speedy Essendon sort of half-back situation.
Essendon was so skillful, though. One of the most skillful halves I've seen this year. Mm. They were hitting targets. It was bang, bang, bang. Yeah. It was like a training
Essendon
drill.
Essendon at their best.
It was any team at their best.
Yeah.
It was great to watch.
Yeah, but the fact that they couldn't stop that says to me that's their one wood. I don't play golf. Is that a good thing?
That's their main club.
Yeah. Okay, good. I did it. That was their main thing. If they can't do that, I'm worried for them. Gold Coast this week, they should win. But then you've got Sydney, Collingwood and West Coast. Really tough 3 weeks in a row. West Coast is admittedly in Tassie, so North's quite a good chance there. They have a very good run.
Long trip for West Coast. Jeez. Is that the longest trip in footy? Perth to Tassie, or was Perth to Sydney further?
Perth to Gold Coast is probably
Gold Coast.
Brisbane, actually.
You forget how far Gold Coast sticks out.
Yeah, I know.
You get a bad wind day, it's normally about 5 hours sometimes.
Right.
Brisbane to Perth.
New York to LA sort of area.
Yes, really is. Or Hawaii, even.
Or for me, Edinburgh to London.
No.
Ryanair.
Not like that at all.
Anyway, go on.
That 3 week patch, North needs to win one of those. Their last four, Brisbane, Bulldogs, Crows in Adelaide, St Kilda. Again, they should win four or five of the games they have left. Mm. But can we trust North to do that at this point?
You can't trust most teams, if you're honest.
Well, yeah.
You can probably trust two teams to lose every week and two teams to win every week. I'd probably one team to win every week and that's it.
Trust nine teams to lose every week and unless there's a draw.
Yeah.
Thomas, it wasn't a good weekend at all for North Melbourne, both on field but I think off field as well, because they've missed out on Jordan Degoe.
Yes.
Who's re-signed with Collingwood. It's another miss for North Melbourne after going hard for Dan Hannabury quite a few years ago, Josh Kelly and Dustin Martin infamously last year, and now they miss out on Degoe. Where does this leave the Roos, and what does it say about that they haven't been able to entice this big fish?
Well, there's two schools of thought. There'd be plenty of clubs, I know St Kilda were after Degoe, there'd be plenty of clubs that are just as ambitious in their pursuit of players as North Melbourne. The reality is it just gets out that North Melbourne want these players.
Yeah, right.
The two schools of thought are, well, the positive way to look at it is it's great that North Melbourne are being ambitious and targeting players, and who cares if it gets out. There's other school of thought is, geez, it's a bit embarrassing they haven't been able to get these players.
Yeah.
I'm more the former.
Right.
I don't really care if it gets out. North Melbourne, if I'm a supporter of North, are actually getting out there and trying to do their best to improve their list. And if they don't get it, well, so be it. They're going to go into the next one and try to get Gaff or Dylan Scheel or Josh Kelly or someone else. So I think we get a little bit too touchy in this industry about who is targeting who. Let clubs target whoever they want. If they miss out, they just go on to the next fish. I think it's pretty much as simple as that. And if I'm a Kangaroo supporter, I'm saying well done for having a crack. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Most of the time it doesn't work out.
It's just an interesting look, though, considering that they missed out on those players last year. They missed out on Degoe. Brad Scott, a few months ago, suggested that the Roos had developed into a destination club. And now they miss out on Degoe as well.
I get the perception. Yeah, I understand the perception of that. And they would have loved to have Degoe. But I don't think he was ever truly going to leave.
I don't think so either.
And I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact, but I think this was probably a tactic of some sort to drive up his price.
Absolutely. Who does it benefit for North's asking price or what they're willing to pay to be out there? Not North.
Yeah.
The Degoe camp.
The most unhappy person or people when this news came out about North Melbourne was Collingwood, clearly. Because they're, we've got to pay more now. that's how it works. And that's whoever instigated that tactic and allowed the story to get out via the Herald, the Age, was a genius. And that's the way it works. I know Gubby Allen is involved, and this is Gubby Allen to a T. He just gets stuff done.
What do you think about Gubby Allen joining North Melbourne, Thomas?
I think
infamously suspended for a year after his involvement with the Lachie Whitfield saga.
Yeah, I'm not sure Gubby Allen has a future as a permanent member of a football department.
It's a part-time role with North Melbourne.
Yeah, it's like a consultancy role.
Yep.
But I certainly think, given his history, as I said, to get things done, that he has a future with North Melbourne or whoever wants him as a potential list helper or an overseer of a football department list strategy, because he's got such a good history in that yeah. space.
Okay. I have no problem with North putting itself out there saying, we've got all this money, come to us, because they're not a destination club, no matter what Brad Scott says. They're just not. If you look at their list realistically, yes, they're doing reasonably well this year, but you just look at that profile, it's not going to be successful. There's articles going up on certain news websites saying, oh, $30 million of failure, written by someone in Sydney who also calls the club Norths for some reason. So people who don't know what they're talking about, writing about...
What website's that, Max?
Oh, I wouldn't want to mention them as
they're... Okay, tell me off air.
Stable, mate.
Yeah. Another player contract story that continues to develop, and particularly over the past few days, gents, is the Tom Lynch situation.
Oh, yes.
Mainly because he's now out for the rest of the year due to injury. This PCL injury has hampered him throughout the first half of the season. And all parties, I think, have decided to put him in cotton wool for the rest of the season. The first thing I think everyone thought of immediately when the news dropped was, has Tom Lynch played his final game for the Gold Coast Suns?
Real LeBron areas after the finals.
Yeah. Without the massive money involved that LeBron has acquired from the Lakers. I'd be shocked if Tom Lynch is at the Suns next year. I firmly believe Tom Lynch hasn't formally made up his mind, and I don't think he's told the club what he wants to do, and I think that's probably what has made the Suns think, geez, if he's not telling us now, then he's probably likely to leave and we'll prepare for him to go. But there's just reading the history of these free agents that leave and players that leave the clubs, it's no longer enough to assume that a player leaving the contract to the end of the year will see that player leave, because Dustin Martin's a great example. He ended up staying despite leaving the contract to the end of the year. But just looking at Tom Lynch, look at all the players at the club who I've spoken to, some of them, the club itself preparing for him to leave, and opposition clubs are adamant that he's going.
Yeah.
And this is not Hawthorn, Richmond, or Collingwood, the clubs that are in for him. This is other clubs that don't really have any investment. They're just hearing that he's out. So all the signs are pointing towards him leaving the Suns. And now the next question is, where does he go?
Well, yeah, and we'll get to that in a tick, but just... on the Suns as well, do you think they're satisfied with how the past week has played out?
No. I think the Suns... Well, I know the Suns wanted Tom Lynch to do a press conference after it came out that he would miss the rest of the year with a knee injury. He didn't want to do a press conference, is my understanding. So then they put him in I guess, a PR video on the website, in which he answered a couple of questions, but it really wasn't hard-hitting as a press conference normally would be.
It's called website video.
And state-run media. Sort
yeah,
of
and I know that frustrated some hierarchy at the club because they said, you can say whatever you want here, Tom, but we need you to face the media and show some transparency. And he wasn't keen to do that, is what I've been told. So it's a very interesting situation at the club. Clearly they wanted to stay, but I think first and foremost, they want to know so that they can prepare, just as Adelaide prepared when Dangerfield told them mid-season that he was going. And Dangerfield's manager at the time, Paul Connors. Tom Lynch's manager now, Paul Connors.
Paul's overseas at the
Paul's
moment?
Paul's in Thailand at the moment. Lovely. On holiday. So it's not beyond the... Especially because Tom Lynch isn't going to play for Gold Coast again this year. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could tell them now and there'd be no real backlash from the fans of the club because he's not going to be wearing the jumper again. So it could easily happen. But I think Tom Lynch is genuinely still just making up his mind. But it's certainly leaning one way.
Which way is it leaning then? What's your read on it?
To leave. And I think it's...
To who?
Well, I saw Alistair Clarkson on the couch last night. He said, we can't afford those sorts
very
of players.
Very straight back from Clarko. He's pretty honest about everything else in the interview, very straight back.
I still believe Hawthorn is ahead. And I've been adamant on that for probably 6 to 8 weeks, that Hawthorn is ahead in the race. Doesn't mean he's not going to go to Richmond or Collingwood. But I just think... And from what I've been told, that Hawthorn is in pole position to get him. And that's how it sits at the moment.
So, and you also said as well that if Rory Sloane wanted to come back to Victoria, that Hawthorn would be in pole position as well. They can't afford both, surely, Tom Lynch and...
No, well, Jake Nile wrote that in The Age. They can't afford Sloane and Lynch. And Clarko effectively said that. I'm not calling Clarko a liar. I've got no doubt they can't afford Tom Lynch on $1.5 million a year. But I would be very surprised if Tom Lynch ends up going to the highest bidder. I think he wants to go to a successful club. And wherever he goes... He's going to...
Well, Hawthorn, Richmond, well. And Richmond and Collingwood at the moment are all sort of in...
Well, Richmond and Collingwood are 1 and 2. Yeah. Clearly, the Tigers are the reigning premiers, and Hawthorn has a long history of being successful, not just the last 10 years, but the last 30 or 40 years. Alistair Clarkson is the coach. who's a four-time premiership coach. So if you want success and you want to come to a Victorian club, those are the three clubs to target.
It's interesting how that could tie into some of what Alistair Clarkson said on Couch on Monday night about how he feels a bit of an obligation to stick around for some of these players, not just the premiership veterans, but the ones who he's brought in, recruits and draftees who he's made this pitch to, come to the Hawks, we'll make you into a better player.
Yeah.
If he does bring in a Lynch or a Sloan and says that, does he sign another contract after the end of 2019? Because he did say as well that unless he is turfed tomorrow, he does not want to coach anywhere else.
Yep.
Which is very interesting.
One club coach was sort of the...
Yeah.
Yes.
You can say that, but so many things can change. We know that. So
he did say never say never.
I would still be surprised if Alistair Clarkson, at the age of 70, had only ever coached at Hawthorn. I think he'll...
70?
I'm just thinking at the end of his career. I think he will coach somewhere else at some stage, because that's what this industry does. In the end, something happens or you think it's time to move on. He gets a ridiculous offer from another club.
Paul Roos, Kevin Sheedy.
Yeah, it can happen so easily. Clarko is an incredible coach, but in the end, he knows he's been at the club for a long time. And I think he's going to sign another contract, but I'd be surprised if he was there for another 10 years.
Just one more on the Suns.
Yeah.
So Stephen May is contracted until the end of next year. Tom Lynch out of contract at the end of this year. Is there a chance that the Suns lose both of their co-captains by the end of 2019?
I think there's a chance they lose both of their co-captains this year.
This year?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I don't think Steve May is going to leave at the end of this year. But if Steve May sees Tom Lynch going, he knows exactly what next year is looking like. And if he's thinking, geez, I might leave at the end of 2019, why not just request a trade now?
The whole point is to go to a finals team. You're not getting that in Gold Coast.
Think about it. Steve May is at his absolute peak right now. He's 25, turning 26. He is as valuable as he'll ever be. He can probably command high six figures on the open market. There are probably a handful of clubs would be willing to offer him seven figures, Steve May. That's how valuable he is. He's got leadership experience.
Yep. He's on the competition committee at the moment.
He's on the competition committee. Yep. He speaks his mind. He's a good media performer.
Yep.
It's been reported that Collingwood's interested in him. I think lots of clubs would be really keen on Steve May. And look, he might leave at the end of 2019. He might sign on. But ask yourself the simple question. If you're a Gold Coast Suns star, why would you ever stay at the Suns right now? What reason would you stay?
Loyalty.
Yeah, loyalty's not enough.
It's warm.
Yeah.
Pacific Fair Shopping Centre.
Melba's nightclub. No, it's not enough.
Dead monorail.
Yeah, the monorail. And there's others as well, Benyon. You know the draftees better than I, but Will Brody is no certainty to be there.
Yep, that's been reported, yes.
Jack Scrimshaw.
Yep. I think he'll go.
I'm almost certain that he'll go. Now, he's contracted until 2020. I think whether he goes or not just depends on if anyone wants him.
Yeah.
I think it's got to that stage with him.
Well, because, and the thing is with Jackie, he's only been able to play less than a handful of games.
Four games in his career, I think.
For the Suns, and he hasn't really torn the knee full to shreds either. If you're not tearing the knee full to shreds, the top 10 pick, you're in a bit of trouble.
There's a really good discussion on RSN 927 this morning, Ben and Max, between Jimmy Bartel and Daniel Harford and Adam White, I think it was. Forgive me if I've forgotten anyone. And they were talking about the need for good drafting versus good development. Mm. And Jimmy Bartel made a very good point. And he is doing some list management stuff with the Brisbane Lions. He wants to get into this space.
Yes, which you broke.
He says that the most important thing is to have a 50-50 split. So, yes, you need good drafting, but it's irrelevant if you don't have good development. Right now, Gold Coast don't really have either. I would argue that St Kilda have reasonable drafting over the last couple of years. Jade Gresham is a good example, but their development hasn't been great.
Yep.
Whereas clubs like Hawthorn and Sydney, probably Sydney number one, they kill both, don't they? They smash the drafting and then they smash the development, and their players, they improve at a rapid rate.
Well, they go hand in hand. If you're nailing picks in the rookie draft who are going to develop into contributors at an AFL level, you're clearly fantastic at both levels.
It opens up another can of worms because Paul Roos has been very, very big on the fact that development needs to be at a better level before players get into the AFL.
Yeah.
There are not enough resources and funds at the moment
at
TAC Cup clubs, to a lesser extent, Sandful and Waffle clubs as well. But get the development right there, and it's more likely that you're going to get, I think, more draft hits than misses overall.
Yeah, well, probably more likely that the mid-ranked players will be better players and be able to kick on both feet and use their hands. But that's the way that Gaelic football in Ireland works. So it's an amateur association.
Mm.
So it works on a completely different level. All the money that comes into the game goes to the grassroots. So yes, the Gaelic clubs, let's say Cork, for example, has a number of...
Cork with an E, isn't it?
Yes, has X amount of coaches and development coaches, but most of the money from the game goes into improving the grassroots of the sport. AFL level, you've got extremely good development coaches and assistant coaches that Paul Roos contends should be at TSC Cup level and are not. Mm. And that, I guess, creates a chasm between the kids and the AFL level.
Well, you also just get natural variance by the way our draft works, because the younger the player, the more chance there is there'll be either a boom or a bust. Yeah. You know, you know more about someone if they've played another 3 or 4 years of footy with mature bodies, with against men, instead of just playing at under-18s level. So if we're drafting more of these players from the state leagues and things like that, you just know more about them. So it's less of a chance that they're going to end up a complete failure. There's less of a chance also that they're going to end up being a superstar for a decade plus at your club because of their advanced age. But that's the risk you're taking. And sometimes you need those older players who are going to be steady rather than the boom or bust chances.
But the older players that are going to be steady are often referred to as list cloggers. So it's a real balance, isn't it?
Yes.
So you bring in Reece Palmer at Carlton and everyone goes, that's interesting. It's a bit of a list clog, but also, you know, you need some experienced heads around the young guys. And then he gets delisted. That was a disgraceful. Why would you get Reece Palmer with draft pick number 105 or whatever it was?
Jeez, he's going well on the waffle at the moment, Reece Palmer. He's racking up some big numbers.
Bring him back.
Real Clinton Jones type numbers.
Real Clinton Jones type. That's good from you, Thomas.
Thanks, Ben.
You know what else is good from you?
What's that?
Fair or farce on the Fox Footy podcast.
I didn't practice a sting this time. Fair or farce? Ah.
Oh, my God, Max. Okay.
Just clip that up and we'll play the tweet.
Ben, I'll start with you. This is a slightly extended fair or farce because we've got a big issue we need to touch on.
Yes.
But anyway, we'll start with this. Ben, fair or farce. LeBron James missed a trick not considering North Melbourne's $600 million 8-year offer before signing with the Lakers.
Yeah, I think that's fair from you, Thomas. I think North Melbourne, unlike you guys here, I think North Melbourne are a destination club, and I think LeBron could fit in nicely. It's a halfback.
Nicely done.
It's interesting. They're in a good place in the Southwestern Conference here rather than the Western. So,
Max, fair or farce. Last night's basketball brawl was like a Royal Rumble classic.
Well, there was no top rope eliminations. Everyone came in at once, so there weren't staggered entries. But there was a real sort of ganging up on someone. You know how the big show comes in, Mark Henry comes in, everyone teams up on the biggest guy. Was everyone on Chris Goulding?
Yes, everyone was on Chris Goulding.
Disgraceful scenes, but real numbers game sort of situation.
Yeah, all right, let's get to some footy now. Thanks for actually playing the game properly. Ben, in 2019, every round should have a Thursday night game, fair or farce?
No fuss. I'm not 100% sold on Thursday night footy at the moment. So I think it worked on Thursday night because it was Richmond and Sydney.
Yeah.
Two absolute ripping contenders. But you've got to remember a couple of weeks ago, we had Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs as well. And I don't think Melbourne in particular can have a Thursday night game every single week. I think it's predominantly got to be Adelaide or Perth if you wanted to do it frequently, but not every week.
Why not Sydney?
I don't.
Or Gold Coast.
I know Gold Coast has never had a Friday night game. The first place, Sydney might work. They've done a few. There's a Thursday night game, the Jason Mooney Cup coming up between Sydney and Geelong as well. So
people go out on Thursday nights in Sydney, so that sort of.
No, I think fast.
I disagree with you there. I like it. I'd like to see a Brisbane Lions Thursday night game.
I think that's
year.
A good idea.
I love watching the Brisbane Lions at the moment, even though they're playing Witches Hats at Optus Stadium.
Keep in mind though, that would still mean you'd have a Friday night game and a Saturday night game. We're already complaining about the fixture with two primetime fixtures.
Why are we complaining?
Well, like Carlton getting 5 primetime games this season.
I don't care.
We've complained about it nonstop all season.
It's wrong, but Brisbane are better than Carlton.
But the point is, then you're adding one extra game where we can play. Oh, I can't believe Carlton's got 7 Thursday night games this year.
So what? There's footy on a Thursday night.
Well, we do like complaining, so.
Yeah, I get your point. Max.
Hi.
Cade Simpson has all the attributes to play 400 AFL games.
Ooh,
fair or fast.
Legs and arms.
The wiry physique, really, is what I'm talking about.
I think that's fair, although I don't think he will, based on comments he made on the couch last week.
I should know this.
Which he was sort of asked about that, and he was, he's very humble, but sort of downplaying that idea, saying he doesn't think he's up to that sort of thing. He's on 1-year contracts as it is, so it would take quite a while for him to get there. Mm. I would not expect it, but that would seem to be the type of player who would, those possessions off halfback.
Did you question his physique?
Not question his physique. I say he's extremely durable and that players who play a lot of games, aside really from Boomer Harvey, are often wiry and
so you look at the 400 players, so Dustin Fletcher, Michael Tuck, and Kevin Bartlett and Boomer Harvey.
Yeah.
Not the most well-built players of all time. Cade Simpson is not the most
well built Boomer is the of all time. Boomer is the exception. He's short and stocky and strong. But the other players that have played a lot of games, almost every single one is extremely wiry and light. And therefore, they don't have that pressure on their legs.
You're built like an old player in your early career.
Craig Bradley.
Old player skills where, if you're relying completely on speed, that drops off. You can't play at AFL level.
Yeah.
That's not Cade Simpson's game.
Okay, Ben.
Thomas.
The Barry Hall situation again proves the AFL's culture is inherently sexist, fair or fast.
I'm leaning towards more fair than fast on that. There's a little grey area.
Of course.
I think Sarah Olley summed it up really strongly and really importantly on Saturday morning with a big comment piece after Barry Hall's comments on Triple M on Friday night. I think in general that it is still very much a male-dominated environment. I think, though, that the AFL industry has made steps in the past decade, but we still have a long way to go.
Again, this is three men commenting on this. Keep in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Which is, I think, are you going to ask another question about
yes,
this?
Yes, I am.
All right, I'll let you do that and then I'll have my...
Okay, Max, fair or fast, Gil McLachlan has made a huge error not publicly condemning Hall's comments.
I think that's fair. Yep. I think I would have liked to see him come out and say that. I think I read something along the lines of the AFL saying something bad about it on Saturday, but I didn't see those comments, so I only saw them referred to. For your first question to Ben, that this is an AFL issue. This is an AFL issue. This is a societal issue.
Yes, I agree with that.
But AFL sees itself as a leader in society, so surely it should lead.
And I agree with that as well. Yeah. But I think the point is more that this is the culture that a radio broadcast like Triple M's has produced over the years. It's a very blokey atmosphere. It represents so much of our culture, of the way people just flippantly talk about these issues with women, with minorities. And other.
Yeah, I agree, but I can't imagine flippantly talking about what they were talking about.
No, absolutely not, but it's what people do. And if you look at the responses to any stories like this that we put up, that any website puts up, people just say, it's just a joke. He's apologised, it's all right. You wouldn't have heard any worse than that in a pub. That's not the point. The point is that you shouldn't be hearing this anywhere.
Yeah, you shouldn't be hearing it in a pub.
No, particularly not in a public forum as well, which makes it even worse that you'd be willing to say that sort of thing on air.
Yeah.
You know, everyone gets up in arms about this whole idea that not all men are doing this stuff. No one's saying that not all men are doing this. And Brandon Jack had some really good comments on this on The Mark last week.
Mm.
But it's just comments that build up and build up and build up. They build up the culture and that make things more acceptable in people's minds. And it trains people to believe that the way we treat women is acceptable when it isn't.
The way that radio works, certainly I know with the radio station I work for and how a lot of radio stations work on broadcast night, is you actually plan what you're going to talk about for first couple of segments. This was 8 minutes in. This was 8 minutes into their radio broadcast.
So you reckon this might have been on the rundown?
Yes, maybe not to this detail and extent to what it ended up being talked about between all the people in the room. But it staggers me that they started the show with something like this. Not that it should be on at any other time. The other point is, Triple M said that he was sacked immediately. He was still on air 30 minutes later. Immediately means immediately.
Yeah, after 7 o'clock he was removed.
Yeah.
And everyone involved in that conversation, as you said, if you read the transcript of it, which I think the Herald Sun published yesterday, you know, everyone is included in this discussion and bringing it up, and everyone should be ashamed of being in that.
Yeah, but I don't agree that others should have been sacked. I think they made the right call just sacking Barry Hall, and the others, they're getting enough public embarrassment at this, least of all Pauline Montagna's wife, who had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move along. Ben.
Oh, yes. More.
Yes, two more. Yeah, two more. One for you, one for Max.
Thank you.
If Tom Lynch leaves, there has not been a bigger rabble of a club since Fitzroy folded in the 1990s.
Yeah, I think, you know what? This is fair. Oh. I'm starting to get concerned about the Suns and their longevity. I know Jonathan Brown has been huge on this as well. And if Stephen May goes as well, that's the crux of the club, not only in terms of leadership, but on the field. That's your full forward and your full back, your centre half back going at
your
the same time. Yeah, your bookends. Yeah, I'm really concerned about the Suns.
Some
really,
they've already been to the draft.
Yep.
That hasn't worked.
Yep.
They have no history at all. They've lost potentially the three best players they've ever had, Ablett, Lynch, and May, if those latter two go. And they are in an environment where sporting clubs invariably go to die.
I know people hate this argument, but I'm huge on this, that the Gold Coast is the toughest market in Australia to start up a sporting organisation.
It is.
A former A-League club epitomises that. Mm. The Titans, you know, they're in the NRL and will stay in the NRL for a while, but they're not the strongest NRL club either.
So. And then that's the dominant sport in that state.
Yeah.
So that club succeeding as much as it is, and they've got a horrible stadium deal or something that's keeping them limited. You have to keep in mind what Gold Coast, having a club there, the point of it is not necessarily to have a club that wins a flag right away. The plan is to just get a foothold in that market and get young kids playing and bring them all
up. Which is happening.
And Tony Cochran has been big on that. He's talked about participation rates growing by...
Which is great. But how long can you wait for while the club and people who are at that club continue to suffer?
Well, you have to wait for a generation of kids to grow up with a footy club in their area.
Yeah, and by then, the people who made the decision in the first place can rub their hands and go, well, that didn't work, but I'm retired anyway.
No, but the point is, by the time those people grow up, it might have worked. If they could win a flag in 10 years' time,
yeah,
and then people will have grown up with that club, and there might be a supporter base. We don't know. You have to give it more time.
You have to give it more time. But again, I believe it's another example of the AFL overreaching in an ambitious plan to spread the game. And it's happened in AFLW. There's too many teams too quickly.
Yeah, 10 teams next year. That's a concern.
It happens, and we've spoken about this on the podcast before, it happens in their several overlapping social causes that they try to champion, which is terrific. Each cause has a really important part in society, but it's too much. The AFL needs to narrow its focus and deepen how heavy it goes into whatever focus it sharpens.
Gold Coast is undoubtedly a failure in an AFL sense. Yes. It is not a failure in an Australian rules football sense.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
What's that for Maxie?
I disagree with you. Okay, Max, on that note. Not on that note, just Max, on a different note.
The note of me.
The last fair or farce. Wimbledon World Cup, AFL, Aussie T20 cricket in Zimbabwe. July is the sporting month from heaven.
Sorry, I heard the first three and they came through pretty clearly. You mentioned something that's happening in Harare.
Harare.
Or Bulawayo as well.
Yes.
Well, I believe there are Fox Sports ads to that accord, so yes.
Fair.
On brand, Maxi.
Le Tour de France.
Oh, the Tour de France, of course.
Chris Froome cleared by the UCI. Story up by me last night. Yes.
Max, you put his cycling hat on.
Is it Salbutamol?
Rupert Guinness hat.
Salbutamol.
An excessive asthma.
Yes, after winning the Vuelta a España. Also winning the Giro. Now he can come back and win all three at the same time.
So once every 4 years, when Wimbledon and the World Cup and the Tour de France clash, you can't sleep. That is an amazing little trio,
just
isn't
European
it?
Heaven.
Yes, right. I like European heaven, Ben. There you go.
Yes,
that's on SBS late night.
And that is the end of Fair or Farce.
Yep.
That's a big, long edition of Fair or Farce.
Oh, sorry. I'll probably take it up.
No, some important issues.
Does it need its own Damo's Dish-style breakaway podcast, Fair or Farce?
Bonus questions? We might go straight into... Have you got a T-bone to pick
happy this week.
So what we might do is we might go straight into the tips and the cups.
Yes.
And because the next team on the agenda was Geelong... Sydney take on Geelong in the Thursday night game for the Jason Mooney Cup.
Ooh.
Brother of Cameron Mooney of Fox Footy. He used to be my favourite player, Jason Mooney, back in the day. But
you must have been a sad child.
He was in 1999, he was our only goal kicker.
I would have thought Jason Snell would be above...
Kent Kingsley, surely.
No, Kent hadn't been on the scene just yet.
I know, but just in that era.
The Cats, this is a must-win game, I think, for the Cats. They're finals hopes. They're not teetering, but gosh, a bad loss here to Sydney would be pretty bad for their finals hopes. Yeah,
they win this, they're going to make it. If they don't, they're a real chance of missing.
Right? I think they go and win it. I really think they go and win this game.
I think there's a good chance too. If you look
about it.
This is what Geelong does. This is the thing. Like, you can sort of compare Melbourne and Geelong, both surprisingly losing games.
Two oldest clubs.
Melbourne, you've got the reasons. They're young, they're inexperienced. This is what they do. This is also what Geelong does. If you look at their record against teams that were in the top nine of the ladder or the bottom nine at the time, per Insight Lane on Twitter,
yes,
they've lost 17 games to both of those groups since 2013.
Yep.
Two teams in the top nine or teams in the bottom nine.
And Chris Scott was asked why last night, and he said he didn't really know, which is probably fair, probably echoes the thoughts of all the supporters.
It's absolutely bizarre. But that also means, like, it's a negative because you shouldn't be losing that many games to bad teams, but they could very easily go and beat Sydney. And I've given up tipping Geelong-Sydney games because last year I was so certain they were going to lose that final.
Yeah.
And I was wrong.
Yeah. So you weren't the only one, though.
I know. But
that was a real outlier kind of performance. So you think the Cats will win, Thomas?
Yeah, I just love it because it just makes me think of Nick Davis, you star every time Geelong plays Sydney.
They're going to show that again in the build-up, aren't they?
Yeah, they will.
Absolutely.
And Nick Davis will tweet about saying, yes, I am watching. Yeah. Richmond and Adelaide in the grand final rematch at the MCG.
Tigers
in to win the Jason Tawney Cup?
Yeah, Tigers.
Tigers.
Tigers at the G every day.
I put a poll out on Thursday night to the Twitter sphere. Who will win the flag, Richmond or the field? Majority took Richmond.
Yeah, yep, they're favourites, and so they should be.
How can you disagree?
So Brisbane then and Carlton then meet the next day for the, well, it really is the Dylan McLaren Cup.
Of course.
But people are talking about the Jack Lacocious or Sam Walsh Cup.
Atrocious for Latrocious.
Yes, that was good from Cal Toomey. Yes, I did see that. So
don't give a damn for Sam.
Do you give the Blues a chance here, Thomas?
No, I like Brisbane at the Gabba. I like Brisbane full stop. I love what they're doing. I love how they've got they're thinking outside the box and
great
the coaches they
the
get into the club as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
I really like everything they're about at the moment. So I think Brisbane win quite handsomely.
Their percentage is almost better than Fremantle's. Fremantle's won 6 games. Mm. It's extraordinary. Yeah, Brisbane should win this, definitely.
Just looking at Lukosius and Walsh playing the under 18 champs over the past couple of weeks. So I think Sam Walsh is the safer pick one. So I think if Carlton had pick one, I think they would seriously consider Sam Walsh, who is a guy who's averaged 30 disposals in 4 games in the top level at under 18s.
Rather good.
How big is he, though? He's in 180s. He's not a small guy.
So how is he?
He's not a Bontempelli 193 centimeter.
I always worry, and maybe I'm a bit unfair towards Darcy Parrish. So I think Darcy Parrish is going to be a 200 game.
I think
player.
Sam Walsh is a much better player, than Darcy Parrish at the same age.
I will always err towards the big bodies in today's game. Always, Paddy Dow, I think, is going to be a very good player. But I just think if you have a choice, you go towards the big bodies.
If Brisbane finish on the bottom of the ladder, I think they take Jack Lukosius every day of the week. He's 195 centimetres.
Yeah, okay.
Runs like Nick Riewoldt. You know, you watched him on Friday and he was taking marks at centre-half back pocket, then pushing forward and kicking a goal, beating guys on the spring.
So what
back.
Sort of what position does he
play? He's centre-half forward.
Yeah, okay.
He's the epitome of a centre-half forward.
Nice.
He's kicked 8 goals in the championships from 3 games. So far, let's have a look at the next game, which is Port Adelaide and St Kilda for the Alan Murray Cup, famous Ballman Division 1 goal kicker back in the day in the Eastern Football League there, Thomas. Port Adelaide, do you give the Saints any chance to continue their winning ways?
No, I don't. Port will win. Port will win.
Have Port put together the least convincing sort of month winning streak, including beating the reigning premiers and another top 4 chance?
Yeah, that's not a bad call. Actually.
Port can win the flag, though. I really do think it clicks.
I already said that I'd pick Melbourne to win the flag, potentially, but I'd pick them before I pick Port. Port has not shown to me that it's good enough yet.
I like Port. I like Ken Hinckley. I like what they're doing.
Yeah. I've been on the power bandwagon for most of the year, but I agree that that win over Richmond was just 25 minutes of blitzkrieg.
Insational football.
Yes. Blitzkrieg. The Melbourne win was lucky, you would say, and the Demons not taking advantage of all their inside 50s. Yeah. And then they didn't... It barely beat Carlton.
You know what, though? They've banked the wins, which is most important. They've banked them at the Adelaide Oval, which I think is a big win.
Very true. And they'll bank this one, too.
Western Bulldogs and Hawthorn for the Wade Skipper Cup.
Ooh, Wade Skipper, yes. That's a very good one from you.
Yes.
Another huge game where the Bulldogs have suddenly made this into a really enticing fixture.
Yeah, not an easy match to pick this one.
You going to this one, Tom?
Saturday night. I am, actually. Yes. I remember I looked at this 6 weeks ago and thought it'd be ordinary.
Yeah.
This is not ordinary at all. I'll be listening to Luke Beveridge post-game if they lose as well.
Yes.
I think, who am I going to pick here? Max, can you go first?
I like Hawthorn and I still trust them because there's this weird little thing. So they went up and played GWS. And everyone's like, oh, just disappointed in Hawthorn. They should have won that game. No, I thought GWS should have been the favourites, and they won the game pretty much as expected. An 11-point margin, GWS v Hawthorn at Spotless with no Jack Gunston. That sounds exactly right to me. Mm. That sounds like those teams are completely even. And I still think Hawthorn's better than the Bulldogs, and I don't know that the Bulldogs can keep up the game they've been playing for another week.
I'm going to the Bulldogs. I think they found their mojo a little bit, and I reckon they're going to continue and beat the Hawks at
any rate. Their pressure over the past couple of weeks has been insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
They play on emotion. So
they
I think
really
that's risky.
Well, it is.
That goes up and down. You can't trust that.
You can't trust emotion, I agree. But when it's on, it's insatiable. And it's completely, it's so watchable. It's terrific. Mm. Every team, in a sense, plays like their coach. Plays as a reflection of their coach, I should probably say.
Sure.
So I'm trying to think. If you look at the way Hawthorn play, they are... tactically, they understand exactly how they want to play tactically, strategically, because Clarko, although he can be a hothead, is above all a tactical genius. Mm-hmm. Beveridge is an emotional coach. He brings in analogies from other walks of life, which probably resonates with some players and doesn't resonate with others. Yeah, real different.
Yeah.
A real different Left character. Yes.
Yes.
But
in the hat.
That is risky, as you said, Max, because if they don't get it right and he doesn't resonate with enough players on those emotional levels, then they can be belted, and that's what happened over the first half of the year in conjunction with injuries.
In conjunction with being the youngest list and not being great.
Yeah, there's more to it than that, but I still think every club plays mostly like what their coach wants.
They're one of the highest variance clubs in the comp.
That's a very good
point.
They
can play like a final side and play like a bottom four.
Sort of Pythagoras kind of chat there from that side of the room. Melbourne and Fremantle for your favourite, Tom. The Jeff Farmer Cup.
Why did you do this? I would have taken Jeff White or...
I thought Jeff Farmer's your all-time favourite.
But then he went
to
Fremantle and he kicked a goal after
the
siren.
Jeff Farmer Cup.
And he kicked a goal after the siren against Melbourne and broke my heart as a 10-year-old.
Called the Jeff Cup. Just to split it between
Scott Chisholm Cup was also would have been appropriate as well.
Absolutely. Melbourne wins this because they need to. And if they don't, then there's some serious questions.
Freo or 200 man, as you mentioned, actually, surely.
Colin Sylvia Cup?
Too soon. No. Far too soon.
Also, Melbourne, the Fife and Sandy injuries really do swing this.
North Melbourne and Gold Coast for the Daniel Harris Cup.
I remember Daniel Harris.
Probably sort of inside midfielder.
Sort of a 21 disposals, 8 tackles play.
Yeah.
I think, North Melbourne, you can't pick the Gold Coast under any circumstances at the moment.
Nope. Perfect time for North to get this game.
Essendon and Collingwood for the Richard Cole
Cup.
Being dubbed as the most highly anticipated non-Anzac Day Essendon and Collingwood clash for quite some time.
I like that.
Just a few disclaimers.
I mean, these small niche sort of statements, really. The footy bubble loves it, doesn't it?
Yes.
I think Collingwood win this one because I like the Pies at the moment. Even though they've got all these injuries, I just think they're on a nice little roll and I think they're going well.
They dominated that.
Sorry, Essendon, I guess.
Second quarter against Gold Coast, they completely blew Gold Coast out of the water, as they should have. You're almost a little bit worried that the other three quarters were so even.
Mm.
But this is a closer game than the latter shows. But I also think Essendon, much like the Bulldogs, high variance. We don't know if they're going to put it together week to week. If Collingwood doesn't let them run wild like they did in the first half against North, Collingwood should win this by 30
points. I think Collingwood is a much more sound defensive side than what North Melbourne are.
Yes.
And I don't think we'll allow Essendon the same free rein as what they got
last Sunday. They did on Anzac Day, did they? We were there, Ben, and Collingwood was just far too good for Essendon. Yep. Up forward as well with Mason Cox running into goals and taking bounces.
Yes. And Brendan Goddard having conversations with players on the field. West Coast and GWS ran out the round of football for the John Giles Cup.
Good game.
At Optus Stadium. It's turned into a good game.
Yeah.
Because they had the sort of first time they met earlier this year, and West Coast really showed how good they were. Yes, on the other side of the country. And now suddenly, how bad are the Eagles right now?
They're struggling.
Are they a top eight worthy side right now? Like, they're going to finish in the top eight.
I'd love to see some power rankings right now. If I would have them on the cusp of the eight.
Where are they? Rankings.
They're sixth.
Yeah.
But I think that's still a lot of confidence in them and a lack of confidence in teams like Melbourne and Geelong.
Okay, yeah. I'm still tipping West Coast, but not with any confidence whatsoever.
I've got a big disclaimer on the performance on Saturday night. I know it wasn't great, but they're missing their top three goal kickers. Oh, Kennedy, Darling, and Lacroix.
This is the ultimate of going against the idea of, you know, soldier down, soldier up, whatever, you know. It's not the same team, no matter what jumpers they're wearing. Yeah. Teams have enormous differences based on the players they have out there. And if you look at, again, the AFL player ratings, they tipped Essendon to win, they tipped Adelaide to win. Mm. I'm interested to see which team has the better quality side, GWS or Hawthorn? Because GWS still has Jeremy Cameron out.
Yes, this is very true. Yes, with Jake Waterman and Scott McGuinness in that forward line, doesn't quite have the same ring as Kennedy and Darling.
I'm tipping the Giants.
I'll be there in Perth, actually, on
Sunday.
Are you
going to go?
Yes, heading across for a week. Yeah, I might get across.
Are you going to go?
Yeah, I haven't been off to stadium yet, so looking forward
to it. Works. Get Annie in the media box, your lovely wife.
Yes. I don't think she'd enjoy that particularly.
Hello to Annie Waterworth.
So, looking forward to heading over to Perth, which I won't be here next week. So the reins are being handed over to you, Maxie, which is interesting.
Max hosting is literally like handing the keys to Hitler. I love this.
Oh, what much? Wow.
I say literally, obviously, you know, it's just emphasis.
Don't literally about literally.
It. No. Theory, so who's going to be the third party? Who are
we
going to get?
We might leave that to your discretion, but also maybe not give it away.
Who's the third man? Hulk Hogan in the NWO style.
Might not be a man. Ooh. Might be a woman.
X-Pac, Kevin Nash.
I might make a Tony Abbott captain's call and just notify someone of who the third person
then
is.
Then I don't like it.
You don't care. You don't matter. I'll make the call.
So you're the captain, but I'm going to be the host.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Well,
that's the way it works.
Yes, just a preview of what's going to be happening next week, ladies and gentlemen, on the Fox Footy podcast. Remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.